Welcome to the jungle. What's cracking? My name is Jim Rome, and it's so good to have you here. We're already having a great morning. As always, there's two shows going on. Actually, three shows going on. The show that I'm doing, the show that we're doing off the air, right next to the show that we're doing, and then the show that you were all doing on Twitter. Multiple shows, multiple lanes. Nice to have you here. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So let me tell you about the program. Coming up next segment, Jason Terry, 19-year NBA vet, NBA champ, the Jet. Jason Terry joins me, and that's coming up next segment. In fact, you know what I think I'll do? I think I'll go back-to-back in hour number one. Pierre Maguire, NHL on NBC broadcaster, comes up at 40 past. Second hour is open, and in hour number three, we're talking about, well, I can't play favorites. We're talking about my favorite football team, America's team, the Cleveland Browns. Morgan Burnett, safety for the Browns, joins me at the top of hour number three. Jets fired their GM. ESPN's got that. Breaking news. Head coach Adam Gase named acting GM. Wow. 1-800-636-8686. Mike Maccagnan out, according to ESPN. Your telephone number is, again, toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at Habitate.com. Happy Wednesday. All right, let me start with the NBA Draft Lottery. That was last night. Normally, I would never lead a show with the announcement of the order of something that's going to take place in more than a month. It doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. That'd be like Aaron Boone announcing the Yankees batting lineup for their June 20th, 7:05 p.m. game against Houston, and then expecting me to lead the show with it. Except most announcements of draft order do not have the kind of drama that we had last night. In fact, none of them do. Why is that? First, the stakes. The stakes were incredibly high. You get the number one pick, and you get a chance to draft a generational, transcendent player in Zion Williamson. Number two, the location. That was different. As was pointed out on Twitter, the draft lottery was being held in the Hilton Chicago, the same hotel where Harrison Ford confronted the evil scientist in The Fugitive. In other words, the drama was thick, really thick last night. And the first sign that it was going to get nuts was when the 11th pick was revealed, and it was not the LA Lakers, meaning LA had jumped up. And then it got a little more intense when the 9th pick was the Wizards, which meant that Memphis and New Orleans had jumped up. In other words, I had not seen people tripping like that in the Chicago Hilton since Dr. Richard Kimball told everybody that the samples had been switched.
Devlin McGregor could give you Provasic.
Right. At this point, the drama was building. And then came even more action when Deputy Commissioner Mark Tatum revealed that the 5th pick in the draft was going to Cleveland, which meant that the Knicks were in the top four. So four teams were left for that final pick. The Pelicans, the Grizz, the Knicks, the Lakers. The two biggest markets in the final four. Zion having a chance to go to one of the two most historic franchises. Man, that thing could not be setting up any better than it was. And the Lakers, could the Lakers who puked all over themselves for the past 5 weeks, could they still end up with Zion? Or could the Knicks get Zion and either keep him or deal him to get Anthony Davis and get a new big three all in one summer? So obviously at this point, when you're in the top four, you want your name not to be called. You want to wait as long as you possibly can before you hear your name. So now is the time to go to the reactions. And here's the thing. I can do an entire program on just reaction videos from Knicks fans, but I won't, because most of them are either fake or pathetic or both. Just like I could spend time on that one dope who got a Zion Knicks tattoo before the draft, but I won't do that because that guy just wants to get run and attention, and I'm not here for that. But I am here for this. Here is the reaction from one group of Knicks fans when it was announced that the Cavs got the fifth pick. If you're watching that on CBS Sports Network, you can see it. The Knicks in the top four. The Knicks in the top four. The dream is alive. Hashtag Knicks tape is back. And then the Lakers are revealed as the number four pick, and it is on. The big dog coming to New York. That's what that meant. Knicks fans are partying like crazy for about 2 seconds before the third pick is announced.
The fourth pick in the 2019 NBA draft goes to the Los Angeles.
Did you follow that? That was a little bit confusing. So the Lakers are revealed as the fourth pick. Knicks fans are freaking out. Hey, LA, tell me how my ass tastes. You know, talk all the junk you want about stacking your championships and us having to fly our Billy Joel banner in MSG and celebrating not great basketball, but dopes who drive into houses. But we're getting the number one. Look at us. Hey, Laker fan, tell me how my... No! It all went down like in 3 seconds. I mean, damn, that was cold. That was cold. Honestly, it was hilarious. Knicks fans, euphoric, enjoying the best day of their lives for like 3 seconds before it got ripped right from them. Didn't even get a commercial break to bask in the glow and to keep on freshening up their photoshops of Zion in a Knicks jersey. I have never seen cheers turn to F-bombs as quickly as they did. And then the ultimate reveal and the ultimate party. When it was official that New Orleans was getting the number one pick, the Pelicans ticket office lost its collective bleep.
Grizzlies.
That sounds good, but that looks even better. Video of that's great. That's fun. I haven't seen that many people in shirts and ties freak out like that since the Dow Jones cracked 26 GER. And that reaction was almost as good as my man Alvin Gentry back in the actual room where the actual drawing took place.
New Orleans.
Congratulations to New Orleans for winning the first pick in the 2019 NBA lottery.
Sorry. My man dropping F-bombs and high-fiving execs from other teams who just lost. Alvin Gentry, that was awesome. And then there's the tie. There's more to this. There was the tie that Gentry was wearing. It was the same black and silver tie that Jeff Cohen, former member of the Cavs organization, had worn to the lottery when the Cavaliers had won 3 lotteries earlier in the decade. And, of course, there is a story behind that, too.
You got it.
Jeff Cohen, who was with us in Cleveland, had worn that tie for all 3 of his wins. And I called him and I said, hey, I need a little help. And he said, Griff, there's no such thing as a lucky totem. There is nothing like that. If you see it, you can believe it. You don't need anything like a lucky rabbit's foot or anything like that. And I said, yeah, okay, can I have the tie? So he sent us the tie. So that's where that came from.
And look who got the first pick. The Pelicans just turned the 7th best odds into Zion. And that throws everything up in the air. The result was pretty much the only scenario in which the Lakers could get a top 4 pick and still have a worse chance of trading for Anthony Davis. And not only did the Knicks not get Zion, who they were going to flip to get AD, but now their pick probably is not good enough to get AD either. So could Zion coming mean that Anthony Davis might actually stick it out in New Orleans? Or have those bridges already been torched? And if that is the case, who can give New Orleans the best package of players and picks to pair with Zion? You see, this is why my man Dell Demps and the Pelicans were smart not to trade Davis before the trade deadline, because you wanted to wait to find out which team would get the Zion pick. And as it turns out, they were the team that got the Zion pick. So now it is officially on. And one more thought about the Lakers. Generally, you get exactly what you deserve. But given how bad they've been, given how many bad decisions that they have made, given how jacked up their organization is right now, the Lakers really did not deserve to bump into the good fortune that they bumped into last night. So now they've got themselves a pretty good chip. Again, the way that thing played out, they might actually be in a worse spot to trade for Anthony Davis, but they do have themselves an asset. The Lakers have themselves a chip. Here's hoping Linda and Kurt Rambis don't just give that chip away or lose it or give it to Cedric Ceballos to hold on to for them, or Sadeo Threet, or ask Eddie Jones to hide the chip. Man, you got to wonder where Slava is right about now. Slava could handle that. I don't know who I'm happier with, Sed Ceballos or Sadeo Threet or Eldon Campbell. Let's go to Twitter quickly. At Mock Moda tweets, certainly Zion is Zion and no longer on TV. Just like Leave It to Beaver.
Certainly Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
Certainly Zion is Zion and no longer on TV. Just like Leave It to Beaver.
Certainly Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
That actually is a great tweet. Get it? Zion went to Duke. Now he's going to New Orleans. He's no longer going to be on TV. Just like the Beaver isn't.
Certainly Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
I think I'll take a short time out, and then I'll get right back to your content. So much more show. I just needed a long form, fat A block open to lay out what happened last night in the lottery. Coming up next, the Jet, Jason Terry. Casper revolutionized the mattress industry 5 years back, and now they are doing it again. Casper's new hybrid collection combines the pressure relief of their award-winning foam with durable yet gentle springs so you can sleep in luxurious comfort with resilient support every single night like I do. Plus, the hybrid is durable for all body types and has enhanced edge support. I love the elevated lift support and the increased airflow for cooling. I get that with my hybrid. And like all Casper mattresses, the hybrid ships for free so you can try it for 100 nights in your own home, risk-free. If you don't love it, they'll come pick it up and they'll give you a full refund and they will not ask why. That's the best way to buy a mattress. So go to Casper.com, use the code ROME, get $100 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Casper.com, code name ROME, get $100 off towards select mattresses. Additional shipping fees apply for Hawaii and Alaska. See Casper.com/terms for additional terms and conditions. Offer not valid for the essential. Limit one code per customer. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You're efforting Jason Terry. Meantime, this email says, Dear Jim, so, while everyone's been burying the Lakers, LA has upgraded their coach, tidied up the front office, landed the number four pick, and oh, they still have LeBron, cap space, the young dudes, the beach, the mountains, the weather, 16 banners, Space Jam 2, and Cougs. Best looking dumpster fire I have ever seen. Signed, Brett. From Bugahaw. Triple U. People who leave comments on pornos. Bro. Just admit to reading the comments section of the internet porn videos. You read the comments? I mean, I'd get into your take, but as usual, your take sucks. I'm not even going to pick that apart. I'm more about your war. Dear Jim, we are very happy that Zion Williamson will be going to New Orleans since we have absolutely no chance of ever going there ourselves. Longingly yours, high TV ratings, a fan base exceeding 200 people, and an appearance in postseason games. Signed, Pelican Lesks. War Flight Deck, being the next XR4TI member to depart when he undergoes dome reduction surgery, then heads to New Orleans to become the new King Cake baby. He'll be in Friday. Omaha! The flight deck's in on Friday. Listen, the thing about Zion. Zion is a once-in-a-generational type player. Zion is a transcendent player. I love Zion. Period. Love the guy. Love his explosiveness. Love his mindset. Love his makeup. Love his athleticism. Love his grind. Love his selflessness. I love the guy. I love the guy. But I have to say, even Zion does not believe the Zion hype, right? And this is not to say that there are not questions about him. I love him. I absolutely would be pumped out of that first pick, and I would use it on him. But in terms of the questions, you know, he is 6'7", right? Now, at 6'7", because of that athleticism and that explosiveness and the hops, he certainly could play taller. He certainly could play, like, point center. But what position is he really? On the next level, what position is he? You know, you go back to his year at Duke. Played a lot of bully ball at Duke. So he'll develop, but he's going to have to. 1-800-636-8686. I'm a huge Zion guy. I really am. I think he's very, very unique. But if you're going to call him the next LeBron, compare him to that, I think I would stop right there. And then what do you do if you're the Brow? Now what? Do you want to stay? Does that not change anything at all? Where do you go? We are out to Jason Terry. He's Batman, and he's down to his last few days. Friday is his last day. Jail is on the move. So if you have any thoughts about Batman, you are running out of time. Friday is his last day. Hey, Rome, did someone say one-armed man? Signed, your favorite drummer, Chad in Orlando. Oh, you mean the fugitive. Chris in St. Pete tweets, Jim, my favorite part of the fugitive is when Kimball jumps into an aircraft, not quite sure if he's flying an airplane or a helicopter, and lands on the wrong runway.
Get off my plane.
That was not part of that movie. I saw that movie. That did not happen in that movie. As promised, we're joined right now by an NBA champion and NCAA champion. 19 years in the NBA, 2009 Sixth Man of the Year. He was an All-American and a Pac-10 Player of the Year at Arizona. We consider him a friend of the program. Jason Terry is my guest. Jet, it's been a minute or two. What's up? How are you?
Oh, all's well, man. You're too kind with your words, man. I appreciate you.
Great talking to you. I appreciate you too, Jason. Good to have you back. Listen, there are a lot of different things that you and I could talk about, but why don't we start with the Warriors and more specifically the University of Arizona's influence on them. You've got Steve Kerr. You've got Andre Iguodala. You've got Bruce Frazier all repping the Wildcats. It can't be a coincidence, right? Like, how much of that success has its roots in Arizona?
Oh, a lot of that success has to do with the roots from Arizona and Steve Kerr and the way he's implemented the style of play and the culture, the winning championship culture, which has been created. I mean, if you look at Steve Kerr's career, started out in Arizona and then on as an NBA champion with the Chicago Bulls and the San Antonio Spurs, he has the championship pedigree, and he's infused that into this organization and into his star players. I mean, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, even KD, as he's become a Golden State Warrior. And they've created this tremendous legacy, a dynasty even, within that organization. And just great to see, and I knew it would happen. I mean, you know, Steve Kerr is a high-character individual. His story speaks volumes, and he's the type of coach that you love to play for.
Jason Terry is joining us on the program. All right, so let me move you ahead to the Bucks, because the Bucks were about to host game one of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Raptors. You were with Milwaukee last year and the year before that. So did you see this coming?
Yes, I definitely seen it coming, and you have to give a lot of credit to Jason Kidd and that staff. I was there 2 years. Jason was there four. And this is kind of what he envisioned. I mean, he laid the foundation for these guys to have success. If you look directly at the growth and development of Giannis, it was a day-to-day grind. I mean, I watched them develop Giannis from the film room to the weight room to the on-court, just developing his all-around game. And, you know, he's taking flight. And you give, you know, the new staff a lot of credit. You give management, John Horst, give him credit. This is just a total team project, even ownership. You know, putting the right personnel around Giannis now this season, you know, with shooters, Brooke Lopez, Chris Middleton, Ilya Sova, all these guys, even the veteran George Hill, have all played an incremental part of the success this season. But the foundation was laid with Jason Kidd and his staff when you're talking about the development of Giannis and the rest of those guys.
The Jet, Jason Terry joins us. You know, you've told this great story about being in practice with him and seeing Giannis on a fast break, and he takes off from behind the free throw line and he throws it down. What's it like to see a guy that big do something like that?
Oh, it freaked me out, literally, and I hate to use that word, but, you know, he is the Greek freak, and this was a daily regimen of his. I mean, one thing about Giannis is he's a fierce competitor, and he wanted to win every single drill. And actually, the time he took off from the free throw line, he was really pissed off because two plays previously, Jabari Parker had dunked on him and kind of embarrassed him a little bit. And so he was pissed, man. He stole the ball and just took off, and about two steps after half court, he just took flight. And everybody's looking like, he's not. And it was just one of the greatest plays I've ever seen in sport, up close and personal.
And it was in practice. Jason Terry is joining us. You know, this season marked the end of Dirk's career, and I'm moving ahead a little bit, but you played with Dirk for 8 seasons. So when you think of Dirk, what are the things you think of first? What kind of memories do you have of him?
Well, just thinking about all the hours and nights that he spent in the gym to amass the amount of success that he did individually and team-wise with that organization. I mean, I was there for 8 seasons alongside Dirk. I was brought in originally to replace Steve Nash, but Dirk wasn't warmed up to that originally because he and Nash had a tremendous bond, and rightfully so. But as we went through it, as we went through some adversities, had some failure, and then gained success, we grown to have a great relationship. My locker was by his for 8 years, man, and just to be able to watch him develop into not only the person he is, the player, but the family man that he's become, is just an honor. It's an honor to have played alongside him and to know him and to be able to call him a friend, and then to watch the legacy that he's left behind, and to watch a guy like Luka Doncic be able to come in now with playing with Dirk in his rookie season and be able to see that process take place. I mean, Dirk left the game in a better place when he left. And that's what you want all your NBA superstars to do, you know, leave the game in a better place. And he was able to do so.
Jason Terry joining us for a few more moments. Now, you're going to be a captain in the Big Three League this year. How much are you looking forward to that?
Oh, I'm excited, man. Obviously, my career ended abruptly, you know, at the age 41. I thought I still had something left in the tank, and still do, but being able to go out in the Big Three now in a league that Ice Cube created with guys that I either played with or played against but call my brothers is going to be phenomenal. And to be able to do it in some cities where there were NBA teams and NBA fans in that are fans of me, you know, fans of the Jet, you know, all that moniker that I created throughout my playing career, to be able to get one kind of last hurrah to go out on my own, to put on a show and have fun doing. But as you know, I've won at every level, and I don't see anything different in the Big Three. I'm trying to bring the championship home.
I like it. And one more thing, Jet, you're also giving back. For years, you've been really involved in youth basketball, and you're the co-president of Lady Drive Nation. Lay that out for me. Exactly what is that all about, and how fired up are you for that?
Oh, I'm excited. Again, this is just a situation in the community that I've been a part of with my own foundation for 12 years in Dallas. My offseason are dedicated to the young women in the Dallas, Texas community, and it gives them a platform to be able to go out and showcase their talents across the nation in front of tons of Division I, II, III college scouts. I have 100% graduation rate over those 12 years. All my kids go academically or athletically on scholarship to the next level. A lot of these kids are less fortunate. They would not be able to have that opportunity had it not been for a program like myself. So I'm very happy this year to join forces with Jermaine O'Neal, who also played a long time in the NBA. At Drive Nation is his baby. He runs the boys' side. I run the girls' side. And we give all these kids hope at obtaining their dream.
He is an NBA champion, an NCAA champion. He played 19 years in the NBA, 2009, sixth man of the year, the Jet, Jason Terry. Jet, like I said, it's been a minute or two. Great to get caught up with you, man. Great to have you back. Let's make sure we do it again soon.
Anytime. Talk to you soon.
Jason Terry joining us. All right. When we return, like I mentioned, I want to go back to back in hour number one. So we go right from the Jet to Pierre McGuire. NHL postseasons. Postseason. Second hour is open. In the third hour, Morgan Burnett, Brown safety, joins us. Smack Off 25 is coming up. I see some of you clones mobilizing, assembling. Got ourselves a Smack Off party. Also, a good podcast this week dropped yesterday. I want to reset that.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I said we were going back to back in hour one. Let's keep this thing moving. My thanks to 19-year NBA vet Jason Terry. Let's talk some hockey. If we're doing that, you know I'm going to run this guy down. An NBC hockey analyst, a scout and assistant coach with the Penguins, and part of that organization's back-to-back Stanley Cups. He also spent time with the Whalers and Senators organizations. He is a Sports Emmy Award winner, named as a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee last year. Of course, I'm speaking of Pierre McGuire. Pierre, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Jim, how are you?
Pierre, I'm great. Let me be more specific. I start every conversation with you like this time of year, but where are you at this very moment, and how is life on the road treating you?
Life on the road is treating me great, so I'll take the second part first. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, getting ready for Game 3 of San Jose and St. Louis, which I think, Jim, is going to have a very long life span to this series, very long.
Pierre, let's talk about the other series, because that may not have as long of a lifespan. Now, you've got San Jose, St. Louis tonight, but you've got Boston beating Carolina 2-1 last night. They take a 3-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Final. It's a team, Pierre, that was down 3-2 against Toronto in the first round. Now they're on the verge of winning the conference. How do you explain the run that they're on right now?
There's a lot of different ways to look at it. Tuukka Rask has been exceptional in goal. That's number one. Number two, total commitment to team defense. They've been phenomenal. Lines 1 through 4 up front, and all three pairings on defense have really been committed to team defense. Number three, offense from depth players, phenomenal contribution from their depth players, whether it be on defense or up front in terms of manufacturing offense. And their penalty killing has been phenomenal. So you put it all together, they're a team that can play a four-line attack-oriented type game. Their defense is really structured and stable. Their goaltending is phenomenal. They've got a coaching staff that's as deep and as good as anybody else's in the league, and they're legitimately big-time good as a group.
Pierre McGuire joining us. All right, so let me stay on the goaltending for a minute. Rask has got a .944 save percentage against Carolina. He stopped 20 shots, Pierre, in the first period alone. If you're the Hurricanes and you're down 2-0, and you come back and you put 20 shots on goal in the first period and have nothing to show for it, how frustrating is that?
Yeah, they were broken. You could see it at the start of the second period, because the second period was nothing like the first. They threw everything they could at Tuukka Rask, and they couldn't score. Plus, they had a 5-on-3 power play advantage, and they couldn't score on that either. So that's a problem. And then you saw what happened. The Bruins get a goal from their fourth line. Chris Wagner out of Colgate University scores to make it 1-0, and then Brad Marchand scores on the power play to make it 2-0, and it's basically game over. That's a problem, Jim. And so you know what it's like. They basically got broken, and you saw some uncharacteristic things happen with their group after they did go down 2-0. And this is what happens in a series when you've got one team that's really deep and another team that's not as deep, and they've had to max out every single series they've played. And Carolina should be so proud. Their team has maxed out every single night. But I think now they've run into the wall. There's nowhere for them to go. I really don't think there is.
Pierre McGuire, my guest. Speaking of that depth, Pierre, when you've got the Bruins' fourth line showing up the way it does, you know they're deep. Now, when you look at success in the postseason, especially when a fourth line is rolling like that, how much of that is about analytics, and then how much of that is about character and a team that bonds and understands each other?
It has nothing to do with analytics. It has to do everything with heart, soul, desire, coachability, belief in one another, and the coach presenting a plan to the players and the players accepting the plan. That's what the depth players do. I go back to the 2010 Stanley Cup win by the Bruins. Their best line in Game 7 in Vancouver was their fourth line. Danny Pyatt, Gregory Campbell, Sean Thornton. Those guys had some of the worst analytic numbers in the National Hockey League. So analytics has nothing to do with it. It has to do with heart, soul, courage, coachability, commitment, and following the coach's plan. And that's what the Bruins guys have done so well. And they've done it all season long, Jim, not just in the first round or second round or now in the third round. They've done it all season long. That fourth line has been such a weapon for Bruce Cassidy and his coaching staff in Boston.
Pierre McGuire joining us. All right, so you're in St. Louis right now. Pierre, how hungry is that city and that fan base for a Stanley Cup? What's it like there?
They're ravenous. They want it so bad, Jim. It's unbelievable. It's an exciting place to be. You know, I had a chance to do all seven of their games with Dallas in Game 7, the explosion after they won in double overtime on the Patrick Maroon. A St. Louis native was scoring the series-winning goal in double overtime. It was phenomenal. It was off the charts, Jim. It's a great place to be right now for hockey. Just like I have to tell you, San Jose is just as intense, just as ravenous as it is in St. Louis. And that's why I think this series has a lot of legs left to it. But no, these people are just crying out to go to the Stanley Cup, their final. They just want it so bad, Jim. It's unbelievable.
Great series, tough series, tied up at a game apiece, game three coming up. And Pierre, the Blues changed up their defensive partnerships in game two. What was the thinking behind those moves, and how significant were they?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. It's something we brought up on the broadcast, and it was a significant part of the game. In the first period, they had a real difficult time, Jim, breaking down the San Jose forecheck. And so Mike Van Ryan, who's a brilliant young assistant coach, I just finished talking to him at practice, Jim, just along with you. He basically said we needed to shake it up. We needed to get more puck movement and less stopping. And so what they did was they changed up the partnerships, and it worked fantastically well. The last 40 minutes of that game, they did a much better job of not turning the puck over and getting the puck out of their own zone. Now, I think they're going to go back to their original partnerships to start this game, but they won't be afraid to change them up if they have to. But it was a significant moment, Jim, in game two when they decided to break up all three tandems on the back end.
All right, so what about San Jose? What do the Sharks have to do, Pierre, tonight to get back on track?
Get their forecheck game going. And the biggest thing, when they're going, and I did all seven of their games with Colorado in the last round as well, when they're going, they cycle the net of the opposition as well or better than any team in the NHL that I've seen this year. And so that's what they need to get back to. Use the net as a reference point to start creating your offense. And if they do that, I think they're going to have a little bit more success. For whatever reason, they were keeping a lot of things to the outside in game two. And that's not their game. Their game is a power game. They're big people, Jim. They've got people up front. They got a lot of skill. They've got a lot of speed. But they need to start getting back to the grinding and the bumping and the ground and pound, as I like to call it. So I think that's one of the things they really need to focus in on.
So you touched on that, Pierre. But bottom line, who is winning the physical battle right now?
I'd say it's 50-50. I can't, because the series is 1-1, Jim. I'd say in game one, San Jose won the physical battle. I'd say in game two, St. Louis won the physical battle, so I'd say it's probably 50-50, but that's why I brought up the point on San Jose. They've got to get back to their identity of grounding and pounding and getting in behind the opposition goal and really going to work.
Pierre McGuire, my guest. You know, Pierre, we could talk about these matchups. I've got to ask you about the run you're on right now, because there was a stretch earlier in the postseason where you worked 26 of 30 days, but 15 straight where you never had consecutive games in the same city. I understand that you love hockey as much as anybody on the planet, but how do you manage to keep your energy up and stay fresh?
I go to the Jim Rome School of Broadcasting. Intensity, man. No, I go to the gym a lot, Jim. I really do, no pun intended. I eat a lot of green vegetables. I can sleep on planes, and I have a really good pregame meal. How's that?
I think that's good. I like that a lot, but I'm telling you, I could do an entire interview, Pierre, on your process during the postseason. I really am fascinated by this. As an example, you do try to eat as cleanly as you possibly can. I know you hit the gym as often as you possibly can, no pun intended. Why are those things so important, and how tough is that to do that when you're on the road? Because we all know it is really tough to eat well and train consistently when you travel a lot.
No, it really is. I think just the biggest thing is to flush the plane rides out of me anyways. That's one of the things I try to do, and it gives me a chance to get away from the phone, to get away from just the outside noise. It always surrounds a series or surrounds a game. And so when I'm working out, I just put my tunes on, and I get on the bike or I get on the treadmill, and I crank it out and do a lot of isometric exercise and, you know, come up, take a hot shower, and get to the rink and have some fun with it.
Pierre McGuire joining us. All right, speaking of getting to the rink, Pierre, are known for showing up 3.5 to 4 hours before games. I also want to know, why is that important? As an example, if I come in, and I've learned to do this, but I've always tried to come in well before the program, but if you go that hard before the program, you have to make sure you save something for the program. So why is it important to you to get to the rink that early?
I like to talk to the trainers when the players aren't around. I like to talk to the assistant coaches at breakdown tape, because that's what I used to do. I like to talk to the security guards that are in the rink that come in and just say thank you for everything they do. So I do it for both teams. I do it in every rink. I just like to be – Jim, I guess I'm a rink rat. I guess that's the best way to describe it. I've always been that way, even when I was playing or when I was coaching. You know, when I was coaching in Hartford, I used to sleep in my office. So I know that's probably not the most healthy thing to do, but I used to do it just because I didn't want anything to slip. And I think that's, but I've always enjoyed being at the rink. But the biggest thing, I just enjoy the people around the game and being at the rink with them. And I don't feel like I burn out. I just feel like I get more and more information. And one of the men that I worked with early in my career, the great Badger Bob Johnson, he said, try to learn something new every day that you go to the rink and you'll have a real good career. So I took him at his word starting in 1990. And every time I go to the rink, I try to learn something new.
Pierre McGuire joining us. You know, it takes me back, Pierre. I remember back in the 90s, early 2000s. I mean, this is a great time to talk hockey. I was in Wisconsin, actually, last week, and I saw Tony Granato, one of my favorites. And college hockey is a blast, isn't it? I love college hockey. Do you spend much time with the college game?
I do. In fact, I had the privilege of Johnson's Lady Badgers team before they went to the NCAA tournament. The weekend they played Syracuse, and then the weekend that they went to Connecticut and won the Frozen Four. So that was in Wisconsin, and I actually visited with Tony and some of his people, his staff, Jim Schneider, their strength and conditioning coach. The week I was out there, my son was drafted by the Madison Capitals in the USHL, so he was actually out there playing, so I had a chance to sneak in and watch some of his games. So it was kind of neat. But, yeah, no, I do a lot of college hockey. I watch a lot of Harvard. I watch a lot of BU. I watch a lot of BC. I coached at St. Lawrence for a long time and had some success there. So I'm a big college hockey fan. I watch a ton of it.
No one loves the sport more. Pierre McGuire, an NBC hockey analyst, a scout and assistant with the Penguins, and part of that organization's back-to-back Stanley Cups, a Sports Emmy Award winner, and remember, recently named as a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee, and that was last year. Pierre, thanks for making time for this show like you always do, and it's great to talk some hockey with you.
It is awesome to be in the jungle with you, Jim. Thanks so much for having me. You have no idea how much your support means for hockey. We all appreciate it so much, Jim. Thanks.
Pierre, I appreciate you saying that. You always say that. It makes me feel good. You don't need to, though. I love the game. I love the sport. And nobody loves that game, and nobody loves that sport like Pierre McGuire. His grind, like, I know a lot of people that work hard. His grind is unbelievable. 26 of 30 days, and I know, you're going to come in here and say, great, Rome. I've worked 26 of 30 days. I don't get to stay in five-star hotels or fly first class. I get that. Respect. I'm just saying that if you're a guy like that and you work 26 out of 30 days and you work 15 straight days where you do not have consecutive games in the same city, that's challenging. So I'm fascinated by his process as well. He said he eats a lot of green vegetables, gets to the gym, and tries to flush the airline flights out of him. Man, it is so true. It is so hard. And who the hell travels like that? That is crazy travel. All right, so we go to the second hour. I'm going to open this thing up to you right now. 1-800-636-8686. Open phones. When we come back, I'm going to break down my thoughts on Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, the Warriors and the Blazers. There's some bad takes about the Blazers floating around right now. They don't want to set the record straight on. Stay tuned. That's coming up next.